So since they couldn't fight or continue the destruction of the railroads in the area, Forrest's men pitched their tents to wait out the storm and groused about the weather and John Bell Hood. The weather was more popular. Hood had made his headquarters at a nearby plantation home known as Traveler's Rest, and rumors ran through the ranks that the big house was living up to its name. Hood hosted several elaborate dinners there for his officers, basking in the warmth of a massive fireplace and enjoying lavishly prepared food, while his troops, many of them lacking shoes, coats, and blankets, shivered and made do with meager rations. Henry, Merle, and Carruthers sat around a small fire, trying to draw some warmth from the meager flames.
"I reckon it's going to warm up today," Merle said, while gnawing a tiny shard of hardtack. "I can feel it in my bones."
"I can't even feel my bones anymore, it's so damn cold," Carruthers said. "Let alone tell what the weather's going to do."
Merle looked over at Henry.
"Does it ever get this cold up where you're from?"
"It gets cold in Virginia," Henry replied. "Some places up in the mountains get quite a bit of snow. Where my family lives, it's not that common, but I've seen snow plenty of times in my life."
"What about ice like this?"
"Not so much. A few times, that's all."
"But I'll be damn glad when it starts to melt off here. That's all I can say."
True to Merle's prediction, the temperature warmed during the day. The sun came out for a while, and that made the ice begin to melt. Soon there was a steady drip, drip, drip from the coating of the cold stuff that had sheathed the trees. Henry hoped that by the next day the roads would be fit to travel, even though they would no doubt be quite muddy. Late that afternoon it became obvious that the cavalry would have to travel, regardless of the weather. A courier arrived from General Hood and brought bad news with him. General H. Thomas, often criticized for being slow to move, had finally taken action, sending part of his army venturing out from Nashville to launch a probing attack at the right of the Confederate line, before ordering an even heavier assault against the Confederate center. Hood was pulling back to form a new defensive line, but he needed Forrest to return to Nashville as soon as possible. Henry halfway expected Forrest to order a night ride, but given the weather, it would have proven disastrous. Instead, the general decided that they would pull out the next morning. The men were able to get one more night's cold, restless sleep in their tents, but they were up well before dawn, saddling their horses and preparing to ride out. Forrest always liked to get an early start, Merle told Henry. They left with empty stomachs, having practically exhausted their rations. A day's hard riding over the muddy roads brought them closer to Nashville, close enough to hear the seemingly constant rumble of artillery in the distance. But night found them still separated from Hood's army. And again, a courier brought unwanted news. The Yankees had smashed the line, forcing Hood to retreat. That retreat had become a rout, as men poured pell-mell over the Brentwood Hills, heading south as they tried to put as much distance as possible between themselves and their blue-clad pursuers. When Henry heard the report, he almost felt as sick as he had after a bullet had barked his skull. Hood was a fool, and his grandiose plan to recapture Nashville and push on to the Ohio River had come to nothing, its only result being the decimation of the Army of Tennessee. The defeat was a terrible one, and now, as Hood tried to pull back, the Yankees followed, determined to utterly crush their foes. Henry figured that since the cavalry had missed the fight at Nashville, now the job of forming a rear guard would fall to Forrest. The next day, December 17th, that was what happened. Forrest sent a large segment of his cavalry galloping across country to rendezvous with Hood's retreating army. Henry and his two companions were among those riding to protect the infantry. Their destination was Franklin, site of the battle that had doomed Hood's invasion of Tennessee, although the general hadn't accepted that fact at the time. Henry and the other hard-riding horsemen came within sight of the Harpeth River during the afternoon. Units of Hood's army were already fording the river east of Franklin, going back the way they had come over the same pontoon bridges. The cavalry turned north, moving to block the Federal cavalry from descending on the hapless Confederates hurrying toward home. Henry, Merle, and Carruthers had ridden only a short distance when a unit of Union cavalry burst out of some trees ahead of them. The Yankees' Spencer repeaters cracked spitefully as they opened fire. With bullets whipping around them,
Henry and his companions charged. Henry emptied his pistol at the foe. Something tugged at his left sleeve. He knew it was a bullet. Another cut through the tail of his coat as it flapped behind him. Merle and Carruthers yowled and fired their carbines. One of the Yankees went down, tumbling out of the saddle and off his horse. But Carruthers cried out in pain as he jerked back and almost fell. Henry twisted to look at him, saw the blood on his left shoulder. Carruthers had been hit and couldn't defend himself, and one of the Yankees was riding right at him, swinging a saber. Henry hauled his horse around in a sharp turn and sent the animal lunging toward the Yankee, closing on Carruthers. The horses tried to shy away from each other, but their momentum was too great. They came together with a crash, and both went down in a melee of flailing hooves. Henry threw himself out of the saddle as his mount fell. Landing hard on the ground, he rolled over and came up in a crouch, holding an empty pistol. He saw a flicker of movement in front of him and realized that the unhorsed Federal cavalryman was hurling himself toward him. The man hacked at him with his saber. Henry's reflexes were the only thing that saved him. He blocked the blow with the pistol. The blade slid off the barrel of the gun. The Yankee stumbled forward, right into the backhanded blow that Henry struck across his face with the revolver. The man grunted in pain and flinched back, dropping the saber to clasp his shattered jaw with both hands. Henry grabbed the saber and rammed it into the Yankee's belly. Blood gushed hotly over his hands. He twisted the blade, ripping through the man's guts. The Yankee let out a garbled scream as he folded over and collapsed on top of him, showering him with gore. Henry thrust the dying man aside in revulsion and pulled the saber free. He climbed to his feet, weariness flooding through him. The rest of the fight was over, he saw. One Yankee was left alive, and he was riding away hell-bent for leather as Merle sent a carbine shot after him. The other Federals were sprawled on the ground, dead or dying. Carruthers still sat on his horse, but he was hunched over in the saddle, clutching his injured shoulder. Merle rode hurriedly over to check his friend's wound, while Henry stripped the ammunition pouch from the dead Federal. When he checked it, he found several dozen rounds for the Spencer, and nodded in grim satisfaction. Now he had ammunition again for the Spencer, and a saber as well. This had been a good day's work, and it was just getting started. For the rest of the day, Forrest's men screened the retreat across the Harpeth River by what was left of Hood's army. George H. Thomas's infantry was still a good distance to the north, so Forrest's command had to contend only with the Union cavalry. The day was filled with sharp little skirmishes, but by nightfall the Confederates had crossed the river, destroyed the bridges behind them, and made camp between Thompson's Station and Spring Hill. Wounded badly enough that he was out of action, Carruthers had been turned over to the surgeons in the retreating Confederate column, although he had insisted to Henry and Merle that he was still fit enough to go on fighting. They knew that wasn't the case. Carruthers had passed out twice from loss of blood and was so weak he had to be tied into the saddle in order to stay on his horse. All of Forrest's cavalry had regrouped by now, and these men formed the nucleus of the army's rear guard. Even though the Yankees were still in pursuit several days later, Forrest's determined efforts prevented the Federals from closing in on the ragged remnants of the decimated Army of Tennessee. Henry spent every day in the saddle, riding and fighting alongside Ernie Merle. The brief respite from the cold was over, and the skies were now thick with gray clouds. Freezing rain pelted the retreating soldiers. The roads were little better than quagmires. The army trudged through the mud and the ice and the snow with far less enthusiasm than the men had shown a month earlier. Back then, they were returning to the land that was the home state for many of them. Now, the land was a cemetery for those who would never leave again. And although few of the freezing, starving, ragged men gave any thought to the season, other than to curse Tennessee's worst winter in anyone's memory, Christmas was less than a week away.